I describe you a lot of times, Ryan, as I'm writing my notes, as a game developer or a person who's able to manipulate computer codes for a program. You're a person that had a decade-long job that designed software for machines. But then I also talk about you as a creator, in part, of a story about your family where you're using things like animation and voice acting, script writing, and sound design. Today, 2016, do you consider yourself an artist first or a programmer, developer first?
Oh, goodness. I think the right answer is to say that I'd leave that for other people to decide. But in truth, like, yeah, I do want to be an artist, and I do consider myself an artist first. Like, it's what drives me creatively and emotionally, and I just feel like, you know, it was funny. Somebody made the comment to me. It was actually I was applying for this space to see if we could have some studio space for our video game. And the person, the curator, was like, "Oh, so you do computer aided art?" I'm like, "Huh? Like, why would you say that?" Like, I didn't say this to him, because I was trying to impress him. But at the time, I'm thinking, like, I don't say that you do brush aided art, you know. And so it's like there's this sense that I feel like computers are just another tool for expression. And so, like whether it be code or whether it be visual or audio or all of those different disciplines that you have to use to like create interactive media, that I think they're all just different disciplines in like interact in the art form of interactive media.
Amy, you weren't initially part of the active team, but then you became much more active in here. What part of this made you, you know, more of a co-producer than a supportive person who's near the project?
You know, I think I initially I was very intimidated by just the technical skills that creating a game requires. And so I knew I wasn't a programmer, and so I kind of wanted to stay a little bit hands-off and let the programmers make the game. But as they started, you know, brainstorming and writing and creating things, I realized that we were creating this narrative-driven game and that I could contribute narrative skills to the game without necessarily being a programmer. So I think it just took me some time to kind of figure out that there was a space for me within the gaming world and within a technical framework. Sometimes I still have ideas that they can dismiss pretty quickly by saying, "You have no idea how complicated that is," or, "Oh, you have no idea how hard that would be to make work." But I actually think sometimes I bring things to the table that maybe they wouldn't think of because they are always thinking of the technical parameters. So maybe I come up with an idea that would be impossible, and then they tell me why, and then we kind of work around until we find a way that we can do something similar. I think at first it just sort of seemed like their project, but I guess especially just because it was about Joel and about our family. And I felt like I had a piece of that I could bring that was maybe a slightly different perspective than what Ryan would bring.
I think also initially I was being pretty selfish with the project because I did want it to be my expression of Joel's illness and our coping and all of those different things. And so it was a bit of a closed door for Amy. And so I think a lot of the past year has been that struggle to like open the door and invite her in and allow space for it, because Amy has so many, like, I mean, she's written most of the game and has so many good design ideas and just like is such a key component of what this is that I'm just really glad that she was willing to come along with us on that.
And Josh was pretty instrumental also, I think, in that process, because I think as husband and wife, we can be a little, like, not sure when we're overstepping or, you know, like, it can be difficult for us to work together or see the value in each other sometimes. But Josh was really great about saying, I want your perspective, Amy. Amy, jump in here. Like, Amy, will you, you know, so he kind of coaxed me into it a little bit more than I was comfortable with at the beginning.
Well, now, this partnership that Josh, you and the Greens, particularly you and Ryan, had before that Dragon Cancer was one of those things that happens by meeting each other in common communities, gaming communities, online forums, these kinds of things. So you knew each other for almost a year before you took a very deep commitment to this project. You being the person who's in another time zone, that distance seems like it might be a challenge to suddenly commit to, considering that you liked this person, but you didn't know him that well. You didn't have a history together. You were fast friends, I guess might be the way to put it. Why did you step in so quickly with such a deep commitment?
I would say as we got to know each other more and more and work together, it seemed like we shared a vision for the potential of video games as a medium. And it seemed like Ryan had a real passion and drive to create. I consider him as a poet. You were asking earlier about, do you consider yourself more of an artist or more of a developer? If I were to put it in a single word, I would say poet. And it just happens to be a video game poet. and so as I realized that more and saw his ability to express ideas through making video games, it seemed like he was this kind of person that I've been waiting for a long time, that I could collaborate with and that shared this vision that video games could explore deeper topics, could explore themes of grace and hope and people's struggles and, you know, the stories that we live with as humans on the earth relating to each other. You know, all those kinds of things, video games up until recently haven't explored in much depth. And so I had a passion to do that, and it seemed like Ryan did too, the more that I got to know him. And then I just felt compelled to help him express, you know, this story about what they were going through with Joel and trying to care for him, and how we could communicate that through some kind of interactive experience.
An early version of this project was not what we're getting today, but I believe it was something like an art installation, something, I believe I heard the phrase, a living painting. Ryan, can you describe more of what you envisioned then, what the idea was before it became this 2 or 3 hour video game-like experience?
Yeah, there's a lot of idealism when you want to like explore, you want to like push the medium, right? And so you're thinking like, how can we do this? And initially there's like this interactive paintings where the characters would move across the paintings, across the wall, and there'd be different challenges of, but it would be more like contemplative. And I think that we oscillated between like typical video game tropes and adventure and challenge and puzzle, and then just pure like contemplation, where I think we even experimented a little bit with it'd be like a video game haiku, you know, where it was just like one image that had some level, some interactive thing that you would do, and then it would like tell you a poem. And then I think we even did, we experimented with like real-time cubism or like impressionism. We were like, or expressionism. Like we were trying to draw from like all those different kind of influences. Josh has an art history background. And so like just trying to understand that and see what we could do. But if you were to look back at those early prototypes, they wouldn't really make much sense. They weren't very concrete. And there was one experience that really stuck out to me in previous years that was really concrete, and that was the time that I spent with Joel in the hospital. One night in particular where he was dehydrated. And it was just one of those things where no matter... It was actually one of those nights where at the end of the night, it was one of the hardest nights of our whole experience with Joel other than his death. And it was one of those moments where I felt so helpless. But it was one of those times in my life that I really felt grace, you know, kind of like that being heard by the divine. And I just wanted to share that because to me, it was like this perfect mix of the mechanics of life, of like all those things that you try to do to fix things, to make things better. And just the poetry of life where you're just like desperate and helpless and don't understand and are strangely a mix of of thankfulness and anger and helplessness and love and all of that. And so to me, it kind of represented that. And so when we started that prototype, it started to take form. And actually, when I made the first prototype, it was just an interactive text adventure, kind of like an interactive poem where you would read it and then certain words would be underlined and you could click on them and you could go to a different part of the poem. And that's how it played out, was just as text. And once I wrote that at Josh's suggestion, we realized that we had something that kind of carried the emotional weight that we wanted to explore with this project.
6 years ago this month is when you learned about cancer for the first time with your son, and the struggle that Joel had and how it affected those around him are very much of what that dragon cancer is about. And as difficult and as negative as cancer is, would you consider cancer an inspiration?
Cancer is a condition. It feels like as much of a spiritual malady as it does a physical malady. You know, it's like, it's the stuff of us, like, kind of twisted. And I kind of consider, like, cancer kind of selfish, you know? It just wants to live, and it takes up all the space around it, and it doesn't care. I mean, if it could care, it probably wouldn't care that it took up all the space and choked out everything around it, you know? And so I think that we see that condition in our world, you know? And I think those cancers in our life are the things that we want to kill and we want to eradicate, but we're not always capable of doing it on our own, you know? And I think that we spend a lot of time believing that we can eradicate it on our own if we just do the right thing. And I think that going through this journey with cancer with Joel has shown me that sometimes, well, most of the time, you can't do it on your own. And so what that requires is that somebody else helps you and somebody else does it for you. And I think Grace has been like the foundation of our lives for all these years, where people have given to us and they've been gracious with us and generous with us and prayed with us and just done life with us. And so both kind of the grace that others show us, the love that they show us, and the grace that we've seen from God, even when it doesn't really make sense to us and we don't understand it yet, and I wouldn't claim to understand it yet, and I'm still processing and wrestling with it. I think those are the things that we can all relate to.
Amy, you know, everyone has a different take on how these things affect us. And the question I asked is, was cancer any kind of an inspiration? Could it be considered an inspiration for what we're at today?
Yeah, I can definitely see how cancer actually inspired a lot of the mechanics of the game. Like, the very way we designed it had a lot to do with cancer itself. Most games are about making choices. One of the great strengths of the medium of video games is that the player can control the outcome, that they can make choices, and that they're going to have a different experience based on the choices they make. And so we came into making a video game, and mostly what we were aware of is that as parents, we had a lot of really terrible choices because of cancer, and that a lot of them didn't really impact the outcome. All the time we'd be wrestling as parents between two really hard choices of treatments we could take with our son. And over again, we just ask our doctors and nurses, like, well, what would you do? And they were really good to tell us on a fairly regular basis, you know, neither decision is going to be the right choice. There are no right choices. A lot of the choices you're presented are just kind of quality of life kinds of choices, especially once you get to the stage where Joel was, where his cancer wasn't curative. So all that to say, that cancer and the constraints it put upon our life became an inspiration for how to create a game that presented certain constraints on the player. I think part of what works really well in the game is that the player has certain expectations of what their experience should be, and those expectations are cut off by the design of the game. And we had certain expectations of what Joel's life should be, and those expectations were cut off by the design of cancer.
Josh.
I wouldn't classify it as an inspiration. I would consider it maybe more as a catalyst. But I would say maybe more of Ryan and Amy's spiritual condition is, I would say, an inspiration rather than cancer. Now, obviously, cancer, like Ryan alluded to, is like this force that's not just physical working in our DNA, but it's like this metaphysical or spiritual force that kind of continually pulls the world into decay. And because of that, I think that's part of what leads to Ryan and Amy's beautiful art and their poetry and their writing is kind of the condition of cancer coming in and destroying something beautiful. But yeah, I would say if I were to try and think of an inspiration, it would be more of the spiritual state of what they're dealing with when it comes to something so terrible.
Ryan and Amy, your life, what you have been going through, is the basis for that dragon cancer, mostly the first half of this decade. Is this game a biography?
It's more like a... feels more like a diary of poems. Like, it's not a biography in the sense that you should expect a narrative. It's more of like a collection of moments. And those moments are those moments coalesce a lot of different like aspects of our life, you know? And so they're, it's like creative nonfiction, you know? And so it's like more like a memoir than I would say a biography. It's not a history of us. It's not a retelling of Joel's illness. It's more of an invitation for people to come along with us into kind of the emotional landscape of what it was like. And so there's those moments of just like sitting and rocking with Joel or playing with Joel in the park and hearing the memories of our life because we bring in like our home, the audio from our home videos and stuff. And so it's like this, I mean, I guess it is still in some ways a living painting, you know? It's like you could sit in it and contemplate it and hear it and you could just be in it for a few minutes. And you can linger in that space if you want to. So yeah, it's, I don't know. It's more of like it's hard to explain. It kind of isn't really conventional in most ways.
Some hospitals will offer a blogging service for family or patients to share what's happening during an illness, and it's often set up with a login, and only a few people can read it. It's usually designed to be kept private, but as a service that allows a family to talk about recovery or progress or treatments without having to repeat it to everybody. And because sometimes it's hard to repeat difficult parts of treatment or recovery, and you want to tell, you know, 30 or 40 people, your friends or family. When did you know that you were okay with sharing this story with an audience of strangers versus the more private route, you know, an audience that now can see it, who have access to the internet? When did you know you were okay going that wide with this very intimate story?
I think, boy, I remember we set up our own little blog for Joel for precisely those reasons. The very first day we were at Children's Hospital, because otherwise you got phone calls all day long. You would get phone calls for hours, and all people who wanted to know and kind of needed to know how Joel was doing. And, you know, I think we'd had a son who'd had a surgery at a very young age before. And that time we did use the hospitals, kind of blogging service that had a password and that you invited people to. But this time we just set it up, you know, kind of publicly, Joel's blog about just his updates and how he was doing and all of that. And I honestly think what drove us to make it public was that we just had this real expectation that Joel would have a miracle. And so we thought, if this is going to be a miracle, we want as many people as possible to see it. And that's really what drove us to be so transparent all through his illness. And it was really the driving factor of creating the video game was the whole time we were creating it while Joel was alive, I still thought we're just creating a story of a miracle. And I just want as many people to know about it as possible. And we did see lots of little miraculous things happen. And so I think early on, part of the game was kind of the details of those little experiences. But then after he died, it felt a lot less important that people understand the details or that we highlight the things that to us felt miraculous. And instead, we realized we just wanted to remember him well, and we wanted people to know what it felt like to love him. And we wanted to try to convey the joy and hope and love and sorrow of caring about someone that you can't keep.
As the game is played, the point of view is rotated, decisions on which direction to go or what device you might want to touch are made by clicking. While the player watches and chooses where to go and what to explore, who is the player supposed to be? As the player, what character am I as I play the game on my laptop?
Josh?
I would say that's something that, to some degree, we've left unanswered. We've kind of tried to answer it ourselves, but it doesn't, I don't know, I guess the way I look at it is I don't really see it as my place to answer that question. Yeah, I think, you know, we've given different answers before, like maybe you're just a guardian angel, maybe you're, you know, the angel of death, maybe you're just kind of an observer, maybe you're one of Joel's family friends. And yeah, I guess I personally like that kind of ambiguity, that you're not quite sure. There are definitely some times where you are Ryan, you are Amy, you're their doctor or nurse. But yeah, those other times where you seem more like the player, like yourself, you know, like a separate entity. I like the idea of that being ambiguous, and some people will just consider themselves in it and that they themselves are part of the story, and some people will think that they're some spirit, and I'm totally okay with that.
What do you think, Ryan?
I think that no matter what the structure that we've set up for the game, you are always you. And that is what is an important aspect to us about this medium in particular, is that when you do things in the game, you and you were to describe them, you would probably say, I did this. And so we've always been aware that you are going to use a pronoun when you talk about this game and this experience. And so we want to be aware and to honor the fact that you are you, and that you might come from a place that you just don't agree with us. The things that we say, you might struggle with too, and you might have come to different conclusions than we have. And so in our design, we've always been conscious that this is an invitation, that you're being invited into this. And most of all, we hope that you feel like a friend, like that it's okay that you're there, and it's okay that you're overhearing these things. And so in that space, we realize that we're inviting a guest and a friend into this space, and we hope that people feel that.
I kind of just think of the player as a witness. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's an ambiguous term also. But to me, Like they're a witness. They're a witness of our life. They're a witness of our feelings. They're a witness of Joel's life. And as a mom who loses a child early, that's what you want, is you just want someone to witness your child. You want them to have known him and to have experienced him, because you feel like he was robbed that ability to have people. I mean, I wanted to witness his life more than I got to. So I do. I think of the player as a witness of this experience and of Joel.
Well, there are a lot of decisions a player can make in this game as to what they see and how long they can stay in a space. But the outcome is predetermined. It's not going to change no matter what a person does. It's not a game that I will compare to the typical arcade machine or a PlayStation home system where I'm rewarded by points or navigating through a maze that gets harder and harder. That's my reward in those kind of games, getting better or getting points. What am I given by playing this game? What's the player's reward for playing that Dragon Cancer?
I think the reward for playing this game is the same reward you get any time that you focus on the hard things in life. I think that there's always those people that are a little bit hard to look at in your life, and there's situations that are hard to give any attention to because it's just easier to not care about the person that's difficult to love, to not look at the situation that feels violent and impossible and scary. But when any time you invest in those difficult situations or those difficult people, I feel like you get a reward in your life, that it's a rewarding experience, that you feel a little richer and that your experiences are a little deeper because you were willing. And I think that's the same thing with this game, that the reward for investing in this difficult experience is that it enriches your life and your perspective.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's this passage in scripture that has stuck with me throughout the whole project that says something along the lines of that it's that in some ways it's more helpful to attend a funeral than it is a wedding. And I think that there's a real value in walking alongside people who are struggling and people who are experiencing pain, and being able to sit next to them and just be with them and mourn with them. And in some ways, that's kind of how I view this game. You know, like when you, if you were to go up to somebody who was mourning a deep loss or experiencing a lot of pain because they're going through cancer or someone they love is, you wouldn't really think to yourself like, oh, this is going to be depressing, and so I'm not going to talk to them because I don't want to be depressed. If you value them as a human being or have some good relationship with them, you're going to walk up to them because you want to help them, because you want to connect with them. And I think that that is a rewarding experience, because you're connecting with another human being, and you are you're sharing a moment together that's very precious and important, and something a lot of times that people need, even though they can't really express it in words.
One thing that's really driven me in this process is a lot of times when people would come up and try to comfort us, their initial desire is to take away my pain. And so I would see people try to encourage me or try to put it in a you know, find the silver lining, or, you know, whatever it was at various stages in Joel's illness. And I didn't need them to take away my pain, because the pain was the evidence of my love for Joel. And so in many ways, I wanted to lean into that. And I think that there are some people that want to lean in to those things. And certainly there's a time and a place. There are things that I wouldn't go near while Joel was fighting cancer. I wouldn't watch certain movies. I wouldn't, like, read certain books. I would avoid them because it was not the right time. And so I acknowledge that, you know, for a lot of people, it's not the right time. But my desire is to sit with people in that And there's another passage in Scripture where the Apostle Paul is talking about how I suffer with you, but I also share in comfort with you. And so there's this idea that I think that we need to suffer together. We need to acknowledge each other's loss and the things that have changed their lives and made them who they are and continue to make them who they are, and not try to take that away from them. But also, if there is comfort, that you give comfort, but that it's not cheap comfort. It's not the type that tries to diminish the gravity and the weight of what that is in somebody. And so it's nebulous what I want something like this experience to give, because I think in some ways I desperately want people to sit with me in this and acknowledge our pain. But I also want to acknowledge their pain as well and realize that we can't give you easy answers, because we still have those questions too.
Yeah, and I think one thing that the Kickstarter platform has given us is this gift that we can create a platform to share other people's stories and to just kind of bring more and more people together to acknowledge loved ones and, you know, pain that all of these people have gone through, because, you know, unfortunately, there's so many people who've been touched by cancer, and so a lot of people have their own stories of loss. We've been able to incorporate messages, handprints, footprints, photos, illustrations, children's drawings, all of those things into the game to create this memorial space to just acknowledge the fact that this is something that impacts so many of us, and that to just share how much people love each other.
As people shared with you, these investors, these Kickstarter backers that shared with you stories of people in their lives that went through something similar, you, as Josh is mentioning, placed it in the game in this hallway, this kind of a hall of memories, hall, a memorial hall. There's aspects of that to this particular game. And Ryan and Amy, as you see these things coming in, people sharing a common experience, what was that like to see those posted in that virtual wall when you're finally able to walk through that curated collection of memories of people that had something in common with you in this kind of pain and suffering and epiphanies and all of the things that come with this process?
It's funny. It reminds me of something that I read that Stephen Colbert said in a GQ article. He said something to the effect that suffering is sacred. And I believe that people's suffering is sacred. And so there is an element of that to me, of walking through this virtual hospital hallway where inevitably you'll play with Joel, that in that moment before that, you're in a sacred space with other people. And it always just, there's a few pictures that really get me every time. And one of them is, it's a heart-shaped collage. And I think there's probably 12 photos of this loved one that are all kind of like arranged inside this heart. And somebody sent that to us. Like somebody wanted what we're doing. They wanted to be a part of what we're doing, and they wanted to put that person that they loved in this space with us. And another one is from a girl who passed away when she was 7, and it's one of her drawings. And another is a son with his dad who died suddenly from a heart attack. And it's like these stories that we hear, it's very sobering and very humbling and a great honor that they'd be willing to put their hearts and their finances into what we're doing and give us the means to be able to complete this. I mean, that's just a great honor.
This game, this experience, this story, this movie, I use a lot of different words for this project, That Dragon Cancer. And I know you've been asked this a lot. about the term game, because it's not what we generally think of as a game. Are you comfortable with the word game as it's published? Is there another word that you would rather talk about this game in, this movie in, this story in, this insert word here?
One of the things that made using the word game okay with me is realizing, how did I interact with Joel? I played with him. And I think game, you know, goodness, game can connotate so many things. There's rules, and if you obey the rules, then you get this certain reward, and there's winners and there's losers, and there's a goal. And we have all those things in life, you know? And so to me, a video game, I use the term video game usually to talk about it, because it's so much more than just the mechanics of an activity. You know, because rarely, even in playing a game, even when you play a board game with family members, like, what do they remember? Do they remember the mechanics or the arguments? Do they remember how they felt when they won? Or do they remember, you know, like the details of the pieces, you know? And so the experience of going through this and the games that you play along the way and the thoughts that you have in the middle of it, that to me is the breadth and the breadth of what video games can be. And I think that those that play video games know that. And it's hard for people coming from outside that space. They think of just the mechanic. They don't think of the activity. So I'm okay with calling it a game or a video game, but to me that doesn't diminish it. And that doesn't, like, connotate that I've created something cheaper because we chose to do this.
This game's release does mark a major signpost, a somewhat of a conclusion to this work, although it's never really over. There may be patches. There will be time spent promoting it and so on. But you've now accomplished that large goal of publishing, sharing. As this game crosses that threshold, for you there in Colorado, is this providing yet another sense of closure as this grieving process continues to go in new directions?
I've been thinking about that a lot lately because I've been sending out review codes for the press. And so, I don't know, I send out these emails and I think to myself, wow, like, in just a few days, our game will be released and in a way will be finished. And I think it's hitting me in an emotional way I wasn't expecting it to, because it does feel like closing this chapter. Like, Joel's death didn't feel like closing the chapter because it felt like it was our duty to continue to tell his story. But I think we've told his story now in a way that we're really proud of and on a way that we can let stand on its own. And of course, like, among ourselves, we'll always talk about him. But I'm not sure if we'll create anything else really with the goal of telling Joel's story anymore. And so in a way, like, this feels like closing the door on this whole huge chapter of our lives. And I don't know, I think I thought I would be excited, and I'm not sure I am. I think it feels a little bit like saying goodbye.
How about for you, Ryan?
I've been one... I've been wondering lately if I've been grieving Joel well, or if something, or if I've been putting it off. And I think that Joel's life and his death and this project has cost our family so much. Like, I think about how my kids have tolerated all this work that's been put into memorializing their brother. And so a big part of me realizes that it's time and that I need to be investing in them. And a big part of me doesn't want to,
because I just want to stay like thinking about Joel and doing work to honor him and maybe again, it's just that activity of doing, you know, like, I got to do this. I got to do this thing to give it value. And the thing is that his life has value no matter if we had written one word about him, you know? And yet I get caught up in that activity of external value, validation, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of raw emotions right now. And, I'm ready to be done, I think. So.
Josh and Ryan, is there another project that you might be jumping into? Maybe not collaboratively, but I mean, this was a big focus for 3 really hardcore years where you just buckled down and really got to it and you went most other projects. Are there things that you feel like either of you can work on now?
I think that we'll continue to make narrative experiences that are deeply immersive and explore broader life themes. But most likely, I think future projects we do aren't going to be quite as emotionally difficult. I think that's, you know, something that's more unique to this project, and it's just so intimate because it's, you know, Ryan and Amy's heart laid bare. And I think for future projects, we might expand that story beyond a single family to a community. And because of that, I don't think it will be quite so emotionally difficult. There's kind of a stigma online when people react to the game that we've noticed that a lot of people, you know, they can't go near it. And so I think as we go forward, we'll be covering, you know, a variety of aspects of life beyond just really deep struggle and pain. You know, I could foresee us doing a game that has a lot of comedy in it in the future. You know, Ryan and Amy especially have a lot of experience writing comedy, creating funny characters, and I could easily see that being an aspect of future projects. And, you know, maybe a future game would be some mix of dramatic, you know, touching moments, but also have some lighter comedic moments or, you know, sections of play that are action-oriented or things like that. So I could see, you know, us trying to just explore the variety of all the things that happen in our lives.